Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, February 9th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sithandekile Mhlanga.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A large network of international investigative journalists find that Britain's largest bank, the HSBC, helped wealthy Zimbabwean clients avoid taxes and hide hundreds of millions of dollars assets.
Zimbabwe is this week hosting high-level business delegations from China and Britain, raising the potential for an economic revival following years of turmoil and isolation by the West.
The delegations, they are actually very genuine, and we have received another delegation recently from France as well. And looking at it, all the delegations, they are very much interested.
And the much-needed rains bring terror within communities following lightning strikes that have killed many people across the country and destroyed homesteads.
One can take reasonable precautions to guard against being struck by lightning. For instance, avoid being out in the open, areas like fields, golf courses or parking lots, and also avoid sheltering under a tree.
A large network of investigative journalists has found that the Swiss arm of Britain's largest bank, the HSBC, helped wealthy clients avoid taxes and hide hundreds of millions of dollars in assets. In the case of Zimbabwe, the bank made huge profits by allegedly engaging in shady deals of over $270 million with some Zimbabwean citizens 7 years ago, in the process disadvantaging the poor Southern African nation of the much-needed foreign currency, documents in Studio 7's possession have revealed. Studio 7's Rachel To worked with the Washington-based International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, leading to revelations yesterday of secret bank documents from several years ago that show the British banking giant provided accounts to international criminals, celebrities, politicians, members of royal families, athletes, and corporate executives. The criminals include members of drug cartels, arms dealers, and fugitive diamond merchants. The secret documents obtained from the French newspaper Le Monde cover bank accounts up to 2007, said to have allegedly belonged to 198 clients connected to Zimbabwe by birth and or residence, amounting to $272 million.
The account records also show that HSBC in 2006 and 7 had accounts holding about $102 billion deposited by individuals and companies from 203 nations, Zimbabwe included. The documents have revealed secret bank documents from several years ago that show British banking giant HSBC provided accounts to international criminals, celebrities, politicians, members of royal families, athletes, and corporate executives. The criminals include members of drug cartels, arms dealers, and fugitive diamond merchants. Topping the list of individuals from Zimbabwe are politicians, doctors, business people, farmers, sports people, and what the document refers to as housewives, though further investigations by Studio 7 reveal that some of these so-called housewives are directors of private companies and trusts.
The documents reveal that some of the political figures include former ZANU-PF Senator Agai Clement Georgias, who owns Trinity Engineering and a trucking company, the late ZANU-PF youth boss and Zimbabwe Air Force Commander Air Marshal Josiah Tungamirai, cricketer Stuart David Robertson, businessman Frederick Mutanda, chairman of Caps Holdings and the Patel family, among others. Mutanda did not answer his phone and Robertson was not reachable. Georgias did not answer his phone either when Studio 7 contacted him for comment. According to documents in Studio 7's possession, clients allegedly traveled to Geneva to withdraw huge sums of money, and in some cases, some of them were said to have been advised by HSBC on how to take a range of measures to avoid paying taxes in their home countries. For example, on January 27, 2005, a Zimbabwean client, name supplied, met HSBC staff in Cape Town and was advised on how to take $500,000 in cash to support his son's credit card request. The son had to immigrate to California to supervise property investments there by the client. These international discussions between the bank and clients will be made available today, including the amounts each individual had with the bank.
Reacting to reports of these alleged transactions, former finance minister Tendai Biti told VOA Studio 7 the suspected offshore banking by Zimbabweans indicate that the money did not come from a legal source. Biti, who is a corporate lawyer, said the economy was on its knees when the transactions were made. In its response, the HSBC said its compliance efforts have been insufficient. The bank said it had undergone a radical transformation in recent years and now enforces more stringent reporting requirements. These revelations may trigger calls for closer oversight of sophisticated tax avoidance by wealthy and multinational companies, a key political issue in Britain and across Europe.
Some Zimbabweans have called for transparency in the use of funds derived from the deployment of an unknown number of National Army members in Equatorial Guinea who were guarding VIPs at the just-ended African Cup of Nations. Several Zimbabweans, including former co-chair, co-Home Affairs Minister Giles Mutsekwa and a former National Army soldier Roger Mtetwa, who was deployed in the DRC in the 1990s, told Studio 7 state officials should inform the public about the amount of money being used and received by the country. Some critics say there was no transparency in the deployment of the soldiers, a situation that will result in lack of accountability for any funds are being used and or obtained from the International Army assignment. Defence Minister Sidney Sekeramai told Parliament recently the country deployed the soldiers following a request by Equatorial Guinea for an elite force to protect top officials. Sekeramai did not respond to calls on his mobile phone. Mutsekwa tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the deployment of the soldiers won't benefit Zimbabwe.
Yeah, what should actually happen is that the nation must benefit. The country must benefit. If we are exporting our expertise within the military, it is the country that must benefit. But whether that is really what is going to take place, I am not so sure. The nation should benefit out of it. But also the exposure should also, in the long run, benefit the troops and the nation as well.
Now, let's talk about the money that is paid to these soldiers. Does it get to the state? How does it get to the state, actually?
You see, what happens is this: we have exported expertise, just as we export raw material, just as we export finished goods. So what happens is the same position must prevail. We have exported expertise from our military. The money should be paid back into the national coffers. But I also know that soldiers themselves, whilst they are deployed elsewhere, there are allowances that they get out of the deployment because they are away from their home station. Unfortunately, we have a very disorganized ruling party in the name of ZANU-PF. You know, they seem to think everything that goes around with the military is a preserve for ZANU-PF.
That was former co-Home Affairs Minister Giles Mutsekwa of the MDCT speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Former National Army soldier Roger Mtetwa says that the deployment of the soldiers was a mere public relations campaign by Zimbabwe.
There is no benefit at all, Mr. Dube. we are only trying to prove to the world that we are a capable country in terms of public relations. There is nothing economical that we are benefiting from this exercise.
So tell us, from your experience, how were you getting your money when you were actually deployed in DRC? And do you think that there is any money, or let me say, some money that accrued to the government of Zimbabwe?
Absolutely not. There was no accruement there because we were spending. That is the time when Zimbabwe economically declined drastically. We were spending there. I think we have heard through press and other media sources that only the big chefs benefited because they were running mines, things like that. But as for the ordinary soldiers, yes, in terms of pay, we started getting something at individual level. Yes, you develop, you can extend your house. But as far as the country is concerned and the general population, there is absolutely nothing except that the economy declined drastically, as I've said already.
That was a former National Army soldier Roger Mtetwa speaking with Studio 7 from Mbabane, Swaziland.
Zimbabwe is this week hosting high-level business delegations from China and Britain, raising the potential for an economic revival after years of turmoil and isolation by the West. But the controversial indigenization law is said to be still causing serious concerns among potential investors. A Chinese government delegation led by the Beijing State Councillor Yang Jiechi today was expected to meet President Robert Mugabe and his senior cabinet officials to discuss the implementation of the business deals with two countries penned last year. Another delegation from Britain is also expected this week, and government sources say in April a Belgian delegation in Harare. Zimbabwe requires at least $27 billion to fund the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socio-Economic Transformation, or ZIM Asset, with the bulk of the money earmarked for infrastructure projects. But Harare has struggled to attract foreign direct investment, which is pivotal in addressing the economic crisis. Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce Deputy President Davison Nyorupiri tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the foreign delegations are an important step in economic revival.
The delegations, they are actually very genuine. And we have received another delegation recently from France as well. And looking at it, all the delegations, they are very much interested mainly in infrastructure development, power and manufacturing areas. So as it is now, the inquiries, according to them, they are really serious. The British delegation was actually sponsored by the British government itself, which shows the seriousness which they have. And the Russian delegation, it also came, and we've got quite a number of Russian projects which are underway.
The concern, Mr. Norupira, I think it has to do with the indigenization law. And some are saying the government is not very consistent on what it wants to do. What can be done about this? I think this is where most of the negative perception is coming from.
This has been clarified to them. What they used to have or what they have in mind is totally different with what is on the ground. What really transpired when we were actually working on the issue of the farms and other things, they think it's exactly going to be the same thing, which is totally different. The indigenization policy is quite clear, and on other issues which the investors are actually highlighting, most of them, they get clarity directly from the president himself and the Minister of Finance, of which the police, as we go, they are still working on it and improve of some issues.
That was Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce Deputy President Davison Norubiri speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Studio 7 is launching a new show, Live Talk The Connection, geared at our youth audience, and we want you to participate. If you are a youth, send us a message on WhatsApp. Our number is 001-202-465-0318.
Tell us what issues you want to hear. This is your show. So, let's know what's important to you. Use the hashtag TheConnection when sending your messages.
And if you're on Facebook and Twitter, include the hashtag TheConnection so we can follow the conversation together. Let's get connected on Life Talk, the connection.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
Now, a look at regional and international news.
The Somali parliament approved a new cabinet on Monday, just hours after gunmen shot and killed one of its members.
The Somali parliament approved a new cabinet on Monday, just hours after gunmen shot and killed one of its members. Abdullah Kayag Bare was gunned down in the Hamad Jajab district of the capital, Mogadishu.
A Chilean mountain climber say they have found the wreckage of a plane that disappeared more than half a century ago with a team of professional soccer stars aboard. A Shamva gold mine worker died yesterday morning while two of his workmates are in serious condition following a suspected carbon monoxide poisoning. Sources say the miner, whose name has not yet been confirmed and was the morning shift leader, went into the tunnel after they had blasted rocks and ventilated the work area by spraying water. Shamva gold mine is currently owned by Metallion Gold Zimbabwe. The accident comes barely a year after another poisonous gas exposure in a disused South African mine that killed more than 20 Zimbabweans. Studio 7 tried to talk to the human resources manager, a Mr. Madume, but he was said to be on another line. We also failed to reach Workers' Committee Chairman, a Mr. Gideon Chirwa, but he was also not reachable. Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri spoke earlier with Mwamba.
This accident occurred on Sunday. It was caused by primary blasting that happened on Saturday. When the Sunday morning shift employees went down to 15 level, that's where it occurred. The guys who were supposed to go and mine in the rays refused to go in and asked their boss to go and inspect the gases. Unfortunately, there is no water which is used to cool down the gases. He was intoxicated by carbon monoxide, and when he delayed coming down, some of the workers went to inspect and they saw him hanging by the ladder, and they alerted the miner, Mr. Maso Onyenga, who came down and also went up. He was also intoxicated, and they said that informed the mine captain, who was impelled by Mr. Mriva, who also went down and tried to rescue the two. He also got intoxicated and fell down something like 6 meters. As I speak, they are still in hospital, the two guys.
What is the company doing about what you have just mentioned?
I can say the company isn't doing much. They are not doing anything because, to start with, they caused the accident because it could have been prevented if we had water that is used to dissolve the gases. But there was no water. We could have also survived if he had gas detectors that can be used to detect gas. He could have seen the amount of carbon monoxide and he could have retreated in time. So the command right now, as we speak, they are only paying lip service. They are not doing much. They are not doing anything, even as far as protective clothing is concerned.
That was a Shamva gold mine worker Skinda Mwamba in Shamva with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
The civic group Ipechuluka Zulu says it is moving the venue of its annual memorial services to remember the victims of the 1980 Kukurahundi atrocities from Bulawayo to the rural areas after police disrupted previous gatherings in the city, saying they will cause a public disorder. The recent attempt to honor the victims was at Stanley Hall in Bulawayo's Makokova suburb last month, where police details descended on the venue, dispersed people and cordoned off the area. According to the Catholic for Justice and Peace in Zimbabwe, An estimated 20,000 civilians in Matabeleland and Midlands regions lost their lives in the hands of the government's North Korean-trained 5 Brigade unit in the 1980s, where they were said to be tracking down dissidents. Mbuso Fuzwayo, the group spokesman, tells a reporter, tells Studio 7 the group is also preparing to challenge the police decision to bar their meetings at the High Court this week.
It is our wish that the court must grant us the right to commemorate the people who survived and those who died. It has been 29 years, and on the ground there is nothing to show for that there is anything that the government is doing other than that everyone is trying to shift blame. But at the end of the day, we want the truth-telling part of it to be there so that those who will be researching will know the truth. That's one. Second, we want the government to acknowledge that there was a genocide and there are a lot of things that affected the people's lives, that even current, it is still affecting them in one or the other.
How was the turnout in your last meeting and who are the participants?
People always come in large numbers and we expect that even if the day will be granted, we are certain that people will come.
You mentioned that you want to move this memorial to the rural areas.
We want to afford the people in the rural areas the opportunity for them to meet and share their experiences, because you'll realize that after it happened, people have never been afforded an opportunity to share their experiences. So there are so many people that are dying in silence.
That was Mbuso Fuzwayo, spokesman for Civic Group Ipechuluka Zulu, on the line from Bulawayo.
The National AIDS Council says the organization is in line with the Ministry of Health for full access to antiretroviral treatment for any Zimbabwean who tests HIV positive. Speaking Friday, Health Minister Dr. David Parirenyatwa told attendees at a Southern Africa HIV and AIDS Information Dissemination Service event that every HIV-positive person should have access to life-prolonging treatments from the moment they test positive. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to the National AIDS Council Financial Director Albert Manenji on the full access of antiretroviral treatment to all those in need.
Well, as a program, obvious, when we are having more than 125,000 people on treatment, what it means is that there are cases where people will default to treatment as a result of some beliefs that are there, and particularly they've got there. People who are actually informed by their belief that I think they have been healed and they can discontinue treatment. And such cases are quite common. So those are the challenges. And they also, we continue to computerize our patients. And as a result, we may have what we call loss to follow-up, not because people have died or they are no longer taking their treatment, but simply because they've moved from one area where they were living to the other area.
And how is your organization working to deal with that issue? One, the issue of those who stop treatment based on religious or traditional views.
I'm quite sure that you have heard the word which is common in public relations, which is called advocacy. So the idea is that in some of our programs, we have actually made resources available for us to carry out a strong advocacy campaign to some religious and church leaders to make sure that they will not confuse people on that specific area.
And what about the financial side of this process? How has that been working? And is Zimbabwe able to find itself giving treatment to people who will need treatment?
Well, in terms of resources, Zimbabwean government together with partners continue to work hard, but and the policy that is there is that those who want treatment, they will get treatment. And at this stage, like I have said, we don't have any patients that are waiting list. We don't have any patients that those who need treatment who has not been put on treatment.
And for anyone out there, can you explain the process that happens when one is tested and they are found to be HIV positive and then they are given the chance to begin the treatment?
What we are encouraging people to do is to go for what we call HIV testing and counseling. The issue to do with HIV and testing and counseling is that you actually cancel, then test it when you are found positive. Then, depending on the level of your CD4 count, if your CD4 count is to about 500, you might not be necessarily be a candidate for ARVs, but you may be a candidate for cotrimoxazole and other things. So you'll be put on treatment. And for those who are CD4 count or below, then they will actually be commenced on treatment there and there. And when they have started their treatment, most of our institutions, including our rural health centers, are now providing and giving ARVs. So you can be treated wherever you are in Zimbabwe, and that process is for free, and people are encouraged to call to those different centers and to get free treatment.
That was National AIDS Council Financial Director Albert Manenji speaking to Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo on the line from Harare.
And ordinarily, rain clouds bring joy to farmers, but thunderstorms currently ravaging the country are causing a lot of terror following lightning strikes that have killed many people across the country and destroyed homesteads. A family of seven died in a lightning strike in Bikita a few days ago. Elsewhere, the thunderstorms have caused serious damage, killing people and livestock. In Cholocho, Radio Dialogue reports villagers are now seeking the intervention of traditional healers after two schools were struck. And in Madlambuzi, in Plumtree, a homestead was struck a few days ago. Villager Tamani Ngube tells reporter Ntungameli Nkomo the gathering of clouds has become a menace.
We have had a very bad start to the season, especially considering that our temperatures have been very high with very little rainfall. And in the circumstances that rainfall has come, it has come with a lot of thunderstorms and lightning, leading to a lot of damages in the community. The first damage that I experienced was maybe close to my neighbor, where two people were struck by lightning when they were working in their field. And then there was some livestock that were struck in the form of cattle in Manamune. And then we also had a recent incident where a chicken was struck down by lightning, leading to the destruction of livestock that were taking refuge in that chicken.
That was Madlambuzi villager Tamani Ngube. Ntungameli also reached Tichawona Zinyemba.
One can take reasonable precautions to guard against being struck by lightning. For instance, avoid being out in the open in areas like fields, golf courses or parking lots, and also avoid sheltering under a tree because sometimes that tree might be the highest target, and if it's struck by lightning, you can also be struck by that lightning. Stay away from forms of metal, particularly because we know that metal is a conductor of electricity, so avoid as much as possible getting in contact with metal. For those who might have swimming pools, stay away or from water, or do not swim when there is lightning. Those umbrellas are actually a potential danger for lightning conducting, and therefore, if it's possible, do not carry an umbrella. Now, if you are caught in the open during a lightning storm, if it's possible, find a ditch and lie in the ditch if possible, or at least crouch with your knees together, and that will actually lessen the impact of the lightning. So those simple steps can actually assist or help in lessening the impact of lightning.
That was Tichawona Zinyemba on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo.
And now a quick recap of today's top stories. A large network of international investigative journalists find that Britain's largest bank, the HSBC, helped wealthy Zimbabwean clients avoid taxes and hide hundreds of millions of dollars in assets.
That's all we have for you today. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a very pleasant evening. Good night.